Good evening, everybody. Thanks a lot for coming. We're going to go ahead and try to get started soon. I see quite a few people in line for beverages, so that's quite all right. We're very happy to be back here at the 49th State Brewery. My name is Steve Cleary. I'm the executive director of Alaska Trails. And thanks. And we're really happy to be partnering tonight with Bike Anchorage. And so, yay, Bike Anchorage. I'm proud to be one of the founders of Bike Anchorage. Started out in 2008 as the bicycle commuters of Anchorage. And it's grown great since then. Tonight is our fifth Trail Tales. Our fifth time we've been here at the 49th State Brewery, so we're very grateful for them for hosting us again. We've already got the next one set up, so please mark your calendars for Thursday, March 29th. We'd also appreciate suggestions on other community trail and active transportation groups to partner with. So our aim is to partner with the new group each time, split the proceeds, and help them and us get new members by offering great prizes like we've got at that back table for new and renewing members tonight. So please go sign up for either or both organizations. And thanks again for coming. I've got a couple other thank yous. I want to thank the Anchorage Parks Foundation for their work to get a bunch of great, yay. To get a bunch of great trail projects on the bond that we'll all be voting on by mail. So go take your picture in front of their great sign there and post it on Instagram or Facebook, or you know, you could fax it to somebody too. I'm kind of partial to fax machines. Want to thank Sage Cohen, who helped recruit a lot of the folks up here on the stage tonight. She made it very easy. I want to say thank you to the businesses that donated some of the great prizes you'll be eligible for back there when you donate. There's a cool bike bag from Revelate Design. There's an REI backpack, thermos, and buff combo. It's cold out there. There is a whole suite of Catan prizes from Bosco's, including a milk chocolate edition. A bike jersey from the Trek store and a t-shirt from Hoarding Marmot. So please take the time to go back and sign up for either or both organizations to be eligible to win those great prizes. I'm going to invite in just a second Pierce Schwab of Bike Anchorage to come up and tell the first story, which will be about Bike Anchorage. But I want to point out, in addition to the prizes back there, we've got Caitlin Gwynn signing up volunteers for our trail work this summer. We've got info about our Trails Conference coming up. You can give to us through Pick, Click, Give. We're actually hiring a Trails technician, and if you're interested in that, come see me after. But I really want to pass the stage over to Pierce Schwab of Bike Anchorage to tell our first story. So please welcome Pierce.
Thank you. Again, my name is Pierce. I did not sign up to tell a story. I'm just giving a quick intro. Anyway, big thanks to Steve and Alaska Trails for hosting us. It's a pleasure to partner with them on their already very successful event of Trail Tales. So yeah, great to see a huge crowd out here. A little bit about Bike Anchorage. We are the local bike advocacy organization, so we fight for better bike infrastructure here. We do bike education and bike encouragement, so things like Bike to Work Day and Winter Bike Fest, which is happening right now. So this is one of many events we have stacked up over the month of February. Our wonderful board member, Lindsay, is in the back. She's selling raffle tickets, which are awesome. You should definitely get a raffle ticket. And she can tell you about some of the other events we have planned for Winter Bike Fest. Anyway, enough about me. I'm going to introduce our first storyteller today. Her name is Kate Rodriguez. It's a pleasure to have her on the Bike Anchorage board now. She's kind of a staple in the bike community here in Anchorage. So let me get the bio real quick. Kate Rodriguez is an engineer, commercial fisherwoman, and avid cyclist who began working with Bike Anchorage through co-funding Anchorage Grit, Girls Riding Into Tomorrow, a young women's bicycle empowerment program. Kate has been commuting and traveling by bike for many years and is also currently the volunteer manager at Off the Chain Bicycle Co-op in Anchorage. She loves participating in youth bike programs, bike to work days, and bicycle infrastructure advocacy activities. She just can't say no to a chance to get more people excited about bikes. That's why she's up here telling a story at Trail Tales. She will be sharing a mentor's tale from the saddle about her time with Grit. So without further ado, our first storyteller, Kate Rodriguez.
Oh man, thanks for having me. So yeah, my name's Caitlin Rodriguez, and if you don't know me, maybe you've heard about a program I started called Anchorage Grit with my dear friend Leo Wilcox. And if you haven't heard about it, real briefly, Anchorage Grit is an after-school program where we take seventh grade girls from the Anchorage School District, and we explore and learn a lot about our beautiful city, all from the saddle on bicycle. So when you guys asked me to tell a story this evening about Anchorage Grit, my immediate thoughts went to all the girls' accomplishments and all the hardships that they endured and their smiles, and I quickly realized, like, those are their stories to tell, those aren't mine. So what I can tell you about is what I learned when I got to spend a few months with this amazing group of young women. So it all started last winter when I was biking some trails down in the Baja Peninsula with my friend Leo Wilcox, and some weather had rolled in, and so we were staying at this cheap motel drinking coffee, and I had wearily mentioned, like, oh, I'm just so grateful for all the things I've learned from bike touring and how independent it's made me, and how I had really wished I had learned these things at a younger age. And with those words, Grit was born, and we spent the rest of our time biking together, scheming up how we were going to get bikes, all the people we were going to include in our program, what we were going to do. So Anchorage Grit really taught me how to start a business. So during the second week of the program, we went to pick the girls up at their school as we normally did. And they're getting ready, and I come in, and one of the girls comes over to me, and she's like, "Kate, the bikes are gone." And I was like, "Well, okay, hold your horses. The bikes aren't gone. This is not a big deal." But no, it had turned out someone had broken in and stolen the bicycles from the program. And so we're trying to move on with our day, and I'm trying to show them that, you know, these types of things don't deter us from achieving our goals. And they even were joking that we were now GWIT instead of GRIT, girls walking into tomorrow, because we walked to our activity. They did a great job, but in the security of my home, I really mourned. I didn't know how I was going to keep the program going. I couldn't understand how someone would steal from a program like this, and the anxiety kept me up all night. But as I'm watching my phone, it keeps lighting up with all these donations coming in, and by the time I woke up the next morning, we were fully funded to replace the bikes and keep our program going. So Grit taught me, yeah, you guys did awesome. So Grit taught me the power of community. It would be an exaggeration to say that our girls were cycling prodigies. They were amazing, but we had to learn how to brake without the use of dragging our feet, however effective that may seem. We had to learn that our shifters weren't these untouchable levers that are gonna make your bicycle sound like it's going to implode. We spent a whole day working on mountain bike skills, charging hills, descending steep drops, how to roll over logs. It was an amazing day. The girls learned so much. And as we're coming back from it, the girls find this really steep hill in Russian Jack Park, and they start going up it, seeing who can get the highest. And I immediately am like, oh God, I know my girls. They're gonna fall. You have a fall every day. There's gonna be tears. I really don't want tears after a day like this. But their cheers were so encouraging, and it brought me in. And so now all of a sudden, I'm cheering from the sideline, and I'm taking a turn, and I'm charging the hill. And we just accomplished so much. They were so overjoyed that day, and I was overjoyed. And we're like crying and laughing and sweating. And so Grit taught me the power of what you can accomplish when you have a support team. In preparation for our final trip, we biked out to Pizza Man in Anchorage, and as we get on the trail, I realized all my expectations for the day were gone. I really wanted the girls to bike together in unity and talk to each other and build this group cohesion and really get to know each other, but they were spread out all over the trail. I'm never biking the same speed, and it turns out one girl is a prodigy and she can bike really fast. And instead of asking her to hang back with the rest of the group, I just kind of give her some distance and occasionally ask her if she wants a snack or some water and let her set her own expectation and her own speed. And she did amazing, and when we get back, I'm like, oh man, did you have a really good time? Are you really proud of yourself? And she just kind of sheepishly looks up at me and grins. And so grit taught me how to be supportive rather than selfish. During our first day of our capstone trip, we biked to the Beach Lake Cabin Compound, which is out in Chugach, and it was the longest ride the girls had done to date. They did an amazing job. They taught me all their sing-along songs. In case you were wondering, they still go on and on forever just because. When we got to the cabins, we went out to the inlet, we skipped rocks, we picked berries, we made popcorn, we had a popcorn fight. We chatted shamelessly way too late into the evening, even though we had to get up early, so grit rejuvenated my joy in a slumber party. And then the final thing the girls accomplished was biking from the Beach Lake cabin compounds out to the Serenity Falls cabin at the end of Eklutna Lake. They climbed 1,800 feet, and that's where all the car support ended. So we loaded up a trailer with all the food and all the camp gear, and I carried the trailer out. And I finally realized how well these girls were doing, because the fatigue is setting deep into my legs. And I am just like, oh man, I'm at the back of the pack, which I was not expecting. But we queued up a motivation mix. I took some song requests. We finally make it out to the cabin. We're playing cards together. We had some amazing trail angels that left snacks for us out at the cabin, which was really fun. We built a campfire and made some s'mores. And it's just been a long day. And because we're old and the mentors are all old, we're getting tired. Just as the sun's going down, we're getting tired, and the girls are still really jazzed. And I'm falling asleep on my bunk, and I can hear girls down by the river laughing, playing, enjoying doing those things that you only can do when there's no cell phones and you're really connecting with nature. But for me, my fear just sets in again. I'm like, oh God, youth, running water. This is gonna be horrible. Like, what, I gotta stay up. And finally, I'm like, no, I have to let this go. Just relax. We've taught them everything we know. We've accomplished everything that Lael and I had talked about back on that dusty trail in Baja. And so finally, grit taught me that sometimes you can just relax and enjoy your accomplishments. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Kate. That's a great story and a great program. A friend of mine had a daughter in that program, and she just loved it. So I thank you for doing that for our community. I see three spots up here if there's anybody looking for a seat, and a couple more over here. Thanks to those folks who joined us late, and thanks again for everybody for being here. Our second storyteller is Ira Edwards. Ira has lived in Alaska since the early 80s. And grew up running and biking on the spider web of official and social trails in the Palmer area. Remote trails have played a big part in his life for access to things like skiing, cycling, hunting, fishing, and berry picking. He helped build many miles of trails across Alaska for hiking and Nordic skiing, most recently in the Matsu Burrow before breaking his back in 2010. Now using adaptive sit skis and hand cycles, Ira enjoys road and mountain biking on our many bike paths and spends much of his winter skiing on Nordic trails and multi-use pathways with his dog. He's also going to be presenting at our Trails Conference in April, And we're very happy to have him tonight here to share a story about marathon racing on his hand cycle and his upcoming race at the Boston Marathon in April. Please welcome Ira.
Well, I guess we'll make this work here. Hi, I'm Ira Edwards. I used to run a lot on trails. Up in the mountains, trail running in the woods, crawling through swamps. Trained a lot for marathons. A really common trail run of mine was to run from McHugh Creek parking lot to Campbell Creek Science Center parking lot over the mountains. So that was a weekly thing in the summer. So, you know, it's like 30 miles or so, but it was a fun trip. Beautiful terrain. I was a fair weather guy. If the weather was bad, we'd do it another day. But yeah, and sorry, I just lost my voice last week, so it's 99% back. But yeah, I broke my back in 2010 working on fixing up some ski trails. Got crushed by a tree, spent almost 5 months in the hospital. That was a life-changing experience. I'm a lot shorter than I am. I'm not quite 6'5 anymore. But yeah, so I don't run, obviously, so now we have hand cycles. For those of you that aren't familiar with what a hand cycle is, it's basically a bicycle, but it's got three wheels, and I pedal with my arms. And that allowed me to get around and go do all kinds of fun things. Started off with a mountain bike hand cycle. It let me get all over the trails here. I rode up to Rabbit Lake 1 year. I've done Lost Lake on my hand cycle. That was really, really hard. The first try didn't work out so well. I had to have friends carry it across the bridges, and we used a block and tackle to get me up the cliffs. But yeah, so it was just more just tooling around and adventuring, and I used to be a fairly competitive athlete. So I, 2012, a couple years after getting hurt, talked to the guys at Skinny Raven and saw if they thought it would be okay if I raced in their Twilight 12K. The Twilight 12K is a super fun race. You finish with pizza and beer. I mean, what better reason is there to run? But yeah, so they were all for it. We started me with all the runners, and I accelerate really slow, so they all ran around me, and I tried not to run anyone over so far we didn't get hurt. Every race after that, we've worked with Skinny Raven, and they've started me ahead of the runners, so it's worked a lot better that way. But that worked out pretty well. It was a real lot of fun, and of course I drank pizza and beer. And so I decided I should try to do marathons. I've run a couple dozen marathons before I got hurt, and it was not like my life's goal to win the Boston Marathon or win the Olympics, but I was a competitive Clydesdale guy. I mean, I'm 6'5", 230, 240 pounds, so I broke 3 hours before. That's not like world class, but you know. So a bike is a lot faster. I'll just say that. It's a lot easier. I mean, it's still a lot same energy output. But yeah, so in 2013, I signed up for the Mayor's Marathon. And that was kind of a fun experience. For those of you that don't run marathons, the Mayor's Marathon starts at Bartlett High School and goes on to military land, goes on the Tank Trail, so it's about 13 miles of dirt roads, gravel roads, and then back onto pavement down the Chester Creek Trail to finish downtown. That is kind of a different thing in itself, because if you're running, you can just run on different surfaces. On a bicycle, mountain bike tires work much better for getting traction going up rocky and dirty hills, and they were really slow on pavement. So we came up with the idea I should do kind of some equipment changes, and I grew up in the Palmer. I'm a redneck from out in the Butte, so we did NASCAR style. I had a bike swap. We did change tires one time, and then we had from a time trial equipment to a more air breathable mountain bike type of helmets and goggles, things like that. About that same time, I started a group of helping people with other disabilities called Team Gimp Squad. Right now, it's a team of me, but I go out and tell people life can be fun if you have something life-changing, whether it's a disability or some family matter or things like that. Do things with schools and go to hospital, visit new patients. But Team Gimp Squad is kind of my outreach program. So with that, since we're going redneck NASCAR style, I got some custom-made embroidered Dickies work shirts with all my sponsor logos on them, custom embroidered trucker hats, and we all wore jorts, jean shorts. I thought one of my friends that was here was going to be, I'm not sure if he's here tonight, but anyway, I had a guy bike with me on the trail there, and for sports nutrition, marathons are kind of different. You don't want to really spike your blood sugar. You want to kind of keep things going. So I had a Camelback with water. I'd have some energy gels in case I got low blood sugar. But he carried a backpack with a six-pack of MGD screw top bottles. They were filled with yellow sports drink. So my friends and all the other sports clubs, they've run all the other feed stations. They knew I was not really drinking beer, but the shock value of all the other spectators was pretty cool to pound a beer at every feed station. Anyway, so marathon racing was kind of fun. I got to do it again. The physical output is probably the same caloric burn as you guys if you ran a marathon. I was not quite as physically tired because I got done faster. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And after a couple of marathons, I got a grant and got a road racing hand cycle. So the NASCAR bike swap actually was a bike swap instead of just an equipment swap. And got that from the Challenge Athletes Foundation, a program they have for disabled law enforcement. And I was hurt while I was law enforcement. And first responders, firefighters, things like that. And so, yeah, I have a bike now. And I decided I raced the Humpies Marathon a couple years ago and thought this was going to be fun. I should try for Boston Marathon. So the Boston Marathon has been my goal for the last few years, just to get that going. I'd run it once, but it's kind of like the epitome of all the marathons you can run. I see Matthias is here. He's run quite a few of them. And there's a bunch of Alaskans that run them pretty much every year if they can. It's a fun trip, beautiful place, and it's a big event. It's probably one of the larger marathons in the country. And it definitely is hard to get into if you're a runner. If you're a hand cyclist, it's almost impossible because if you're not a Boston bombing victim and if you're not a disabled veteran, there's only six spots available. So I had to both qualify and be randomly selected for one of those six spots. So it's kind of hokey that even if I were the world champion and Olympic medalist in marathon, which I'm not, you may not get into the race, where if you're the fastest runner, you get into the race. But yeah, so the marathon training has been kind of fun that way. Did the Humpies Marathon that year in 2016 and qualified. It was great. Unfortunately, I could not apply to get into the Boston Marathon. I got a bison permit, and if anyone here hunts or fishes, it's one of those one things you don't really get very often. It only took me 32 years, so I'm nothing if not persistent. My season, my week to go out hunting was the middle of October, which is when they allowed the disabled athletes to apply, and I figured I can always apply again. I will probably not get a bison tag again. So 2016 didn't really work to get into the 2017 marathon because I was hunting and there was no cell service. I got a bison too, so yep. Only guy in a wheelchair to ever get a wild bison. There's been game farm bison got. But yeah, so, but I doubled down my efforts and spent all of last year and the year before that training. And so I did the Mayor's Marathon, I did Humpies Marathon, I did the Kenai Marathon. All of those I did really good times in and got in this year. For those of you that aren't familiar with marathons are mostly type 2 fun. There's three types of fun. There's type 1 fun, which everyone calls fun. Type 2 fun is kind of miserable sometimes, and you get to tell good stories about it. Type 3 fun, you really never want to do that again. So this last year's Kenai Marathon, I thought was going to be awesome. It's all flat. There's like 200 feet of hills. And I figured I did it on a training run last summer in an hour 40. I'm like, I can do it in an hour 20 if I race hard. It was 40 degrees and raining hard on race day. End of September, and that was not really fun. I cramped up, and I finished like in 2 hours and 5 minutes, like 40 minutes slower than my training run during the summer. So yeah, but it was still fast enough to qualify for Boston Marathon on top of my other ones. So I applied to get in, and I randomly got in. Randomly because there's only six spaces available to non-veterans and non-bombing victims. And honestly, the bombing victims should get in because they had a rough go at things. I mean, but yeah, marathon racing is quite a bit different. Like I said, it ends up being a little bit faster. The winning times for these things are usually an hour and a half or so versus around 2 hours for a regular marathon runner. Because I have gears, I can pedal. Uphills are really, really slow. If any of you guys have run any of the local races going out of Westchester Lagoon, women with walkers and their baby strollers go up that hill out of Westchester faster than I can bike up it. But yeah, downhills are really fast. Training has been a lot of different things. I do a lot of strength training. I Nordic ski a lot in the winter, so that's a lot of double pulling like this. I've got my bike on a fluid trainer, just a bike trainer in the living room, so I takes up a lot of space, but it gives me an incentive to hop onto it if I see it all the time. And then, Yeah, I'm excited to go to Boston this year, see what I can do there. And the best part is I'm losing Christmas, so Christmas is a lot farther gone than it was a couple months ago. And I will be looking really good, like Nacho Libre said, Jack Black. I'll be having some fantastic stretchy pants.
Awesome, thanks, Ira. Our third storyteller for today is Nancy Felton. Nancy is a retired nurse practitioner who lived in Anchorage's first co-housing community, Raven's Roost. Biking became a serious activity for her when she met her husband, Chris, at age 33. They did their first bike packing trip when she was 41, the Yucatan in Mexico. Since then, they have done trips in other areas of Mexico, New Zealand, Australia, Europe, and the lower 48. When she turned 60, she biked across the United States and down to Florida. Nancy loves to bike, and it makes her smile. Nancy will share a story on animal anxieties and fears, real fear, and what an active imagination of what ifs can bring while riding. All right, take it away, Nancy.
So one thing you should know about me is that I'm kind of an anxious person. And this doesn't make me that nervous. I don't really mind talking to all of you because this is okay. But I worry about things and I get really nervous about things. And one of those things is animal encounters when I'm biking. And some of them are just because I have this really active imagination. And some of them are kind of reality based. But so what if we were biking in Colorado on this bike trail and it was hot and sunny and so the snakes were out and I almost ran over this snake. And then I'm thinking to myself, what if that snake got caught in the spokes and it was going round and round and then I couldn't get off my bike because it was going to strike. And I mean, it's just you know how you're riding and there's this dead animal on the road? And so I'm always thinking maybe that animal isn't really dead. Maybe it has one last breath and it's gonna come up and get me as I'm going by. So I always give these wide bursts. Now, so far, none of them have risen from the dead, so I've been okay. But I still always kind of go way around. But then, there are really fears. I mean, legitimate, moose and bear, especially in Alaska. And I mean, we've had our bear encounters. We were riding in Montana on the highway, son, and we had to get to the top at a certain time. And there's this bear that's just not moving other than towards us. And finally, we were able to flag a car down that kind of aided us as a shield so we could get around. And then we were on the Denali, the park highway, and we were having just a great ride. We're coming back. And then there's this bear, and Chris is Nance, there's a bear. And I'm yeah, I got it. I see it. So we kind of do what you're supposed to. You get off your bike, you kind of stand there, and the bear is kind of ambling towards us. And then we're kind of going backwards. And I'm Chris, I'm too anxious. I can't handle this anymore. I said, let's just get on our bikes and just go the other way. I thought, I'd rather have the bear attack me when I couldn't see it than have to look at it while it was getting me. So, and then there are dogs. I don't really enjoy the chases. They're just not my favorite thing, but it's kind of inevitable with biking. And when we were doing our cross-country trip, we had to bike through Washington through a reservation. And the res dogs are known to be chasers and kind of aggressive. And the other thing, it was a Sunday morning, and I think Sunday mornings make you the most vulnerable to dog attacks because, one, there's not much traffic. So there's no cars to kind of distract the dogs. The dogs have had all night to sleep, so they are revved up, ready for someone to just come by. And then it's usually cool. In the afternoons, they're kind of sunned out and lethargic, but not in the morning. They are ready. So we've made it through about two-thirds of the reservation. I'm feeling a little good, but I've got my dog anxiety going, And then all of a sudden, these two pit bulls just like come charging at us. I mean, they were so scary. Their teeth are hanging down. The slobber is coming out. They're barking. So then I start riding like a wild woman. I'm like riding on the left-hand side of the road as far as I can. I'm like, I don't even care if a car hits me. I'd rather be hit by a car than these dogs. So somehow we outrode them. I'm not quite sure how we did it, but we did. And it was funny because later that night we met some other cyclists who had done the same route, and they talked about the same dogs. So there are some animals that I haven't even thought about to be nervous about. I mean, now I have it on my nervous radar, but I hadn't really thought about it. When we were in Western Australia, we were told to watch out for magpies. And I'm like, magpies? I mean, they're loud and squawky, but like, what do you have to worry about magpies? Well, the magpies in Western Australia like to dive bomb cyclists. And they said, make sure you never look up without eye protection because they can like peck out your eyes. So the first couple days, we didn't have any magpie encounters, but you know, I'm always listening just in case. And so then it's like we're riding along and all of a sudden this magpie just like flies across in front of your face and you're just like, what? And then you, when it hits your helmet, you're just like, so, I mean, magpies can be very disorienting. And, you know, when you're loaded up, your bike isn't as stable as when you're just freewheeling it. So, but we never looked up, so we kept our vision the whole time. And then this other thing in Australia that I hadn't, like, I used to think they were so cute, emus. So emus are kind of like ostriches, but they're a little bit smaller. But they're like, they can be 6 feet tall. So I always thought they were really cute. And I remember we were riding this one day and they were way off in a field. And I'm like, oh, it'd be great to get a picture. You know, you take a picture and they're like this little dot in your camera or whatever. Well, be careful of what you ask for. Because, so we're on this ride. We go to this reserve. We're having lunch at a picnic table they had. And we see these emus. And then they get a little closer. And then they're like really close. And it's like, ooh, ooh, like, you know, like get away from me. But he really wanted my sandwich. And you know, there's all these signs that say, do not feed the animals. And it was just like really, really scary. I mean, like, because there wasn't anything to defend yourself. Like one time we were kayaking in Mexico and we had all these pelicans that wanted to come to breakfast with us. And we're like, no way. We got our paddles out, you know, and we kind of shooed them away. And that worked out perfect. But with this emu, there was no paddle. There was nothing. I finally caved. I gave it my sandwich. And I have never enjoyed emus. I mean, they have these big, beady eyes and these beaks. So anyway, I do not enjoy emus anymore. And you know, there was another animal that I also hadn't really thought about to be concerned about. We were on a road trip with our bikes, and we were camping on Assateague Island, which is in Maryland. And it's a national seashore area, and it's known for its wild ponies. They're like these ponies all over the place. And so we decided to do a ride that afternoon, and we were going to do an out and back ride. And so it was a seashore, it was windy, we had this really stiff headwind going out. So when we turned around, it was like, oh man, I'm like a really good rider. I am going so fast, it was great. And so towards the end of the ride, we had to kind of go up this bridge and then go down. And as we're going down, I am like so happy. I'm like fast, the wind is pushing me. And then close to the bottom, I see that there's these wild ponies on the left-hand side. So I'm like, okay, you know, I got to keep those in mind. You know, they could come out across the road. I need to pay attention. And just as I'm entering the road from the bridge, out of the corner of my eye, I see this. And I'm like, oh, and then that's all I remember. I got slammed with a deer. I just crashed right into me. I don't even remember it. I woke up, you know, like head first, my helmet's cracked, I've got some scrapes. But ultimately, I was fine. An hour later, I could remember my 20-digit calling card, and I knew that I didn't have any head damage. And so from that, I realized you don't have to worry about those wild ponies. It's those sneaky deers to be aware of. So I do get nervous. I do worry about a lot of things, but I really try not to let it affect my enjoyment of biking, and I love bike packing. And if you don't worry about animal encounters, you don't need to start. Rest assured, I'll take care of it for you.
Well, I'm glad you survived all those many encounters to come and tell us your story tonight. We're going to do one more before the break. I originally told Tony he was going to go after the break, so I'm giving him a minute to get ready. We'll go ahead and do one more story and then take a break. Tony Knowles is familiar to lots of folks here, I'm sure. He came to Alaska in 1968 working for an oil drilling company. He was a roughneck on the North Slope working on the second exploratory rig in Prudhoe Bay. He and his wife Susan then started a restaurant, the Grizzly Burger. He continued on the restaurant business and had the Downtown Deli down here in 1975. He served on the Anchorage Assembly from 1975 through 79, and then as mayor of Anchorage from 1981 to 87, and governor of Alaska from 1994 to 2002. He graduated from Yale University with a degree in economics, served in the Army in the 82nd Airborne, and in Vietnam in 1964 and 65. He and his wife have three children. Tony, as an aside, told me that he's done 7 Mayor's Marathons and 8 50K Tour of Anchorage ski races. Yeah. So I...
That was a long time ago.
I had time to add that up. That's over 700 kilometers just in those, 15 races, not to mention all the training and all the fun he's had on the trail that bears his name, that many of us enjoy every day. And tonight, he's not done yet. He's going to share a story on how the Coastal Trail came about, but ideas on trail connections and further trail projects for the future. Please welcome Tony Knowles.
Thank you very much. I was told I have 7 minutes. And it's been a long time since I've done much public speaking, and I noticed none of the other speakers used any notes. So I apologize ahead of time for the delivery, but maybe it's like Mark Twain supposedly said about Wagner's music, it's much better than it sounds. Okay. Okay, you can start the clock now, Steve. Tonight I do want to share some stories about Anchorage trails and then offer a humble, simple step forward for Alaska's trails. Anyone's image of Anchorage really has to involve trails. Trails are a vital and integral part of our community. Very few other cities in America can have anything that can compare to our over 100 miles of urban Anchorage trails and the several hundred miles of other trails in our neighbor Chugach State Park. The Laney Fleischer Chester Creek Trail, 4 miles from Goose Lake to Westchester Lacoon, was the first paved trail in Anchorage. A group of women advocates led by Laney Fleischer had the vision and incredible persistence to get public support, the city council support, for passing a bond issue. And after that, trails began to blossom. A little over a decade later came the chance to build the Coastal Trail. In the late 1970s, I was on the Anchorage Assembly, and a person I knew, Peter Scholes and Dee Frankfurth, They actually were working for Alaska Center for the Environment at the time, and they insisted on taking me out on a personal tour that could show me out in the mud flats what a great trail it would be. I was out near Fish Creek, and I had the feeling if I didn't agree with them, they were going to leave me there till high tide. So I was hooked. But then the battle began. First of all, with the state, because they had plans already for a Tidewater Freeway. Nice name, bad idea. Then they kind of saw the light. And then next came the railroad. And as a new young mayor, I went to talk to the head of the railroad. He was a federal railroad at the time. And he said, "Mr. Mayor, the answer is not no, it's never." And that was his attitude towards mixing people with trains. And but the state then bought the railroad, and that fixed that problem. But then the next problem was the objection of some influential people, such as the legendary Bob Atwood, who at the time was the owner and publisher of the Anchorage Times, which dominated the news media. And he not only was against it, but because the trail would run right by his house, think of the kinds of people that would walk right by his house. But he actually kind of saw the light. And that was okay. So then the next one was the airport. And they don't, if you're not a passenger in the terminal, they don't want you on the airport lands, period. And they just said no. But finally, we actually even got the airport to figure out that it was probably okay. And so, against all odds, but because of the public support, it got built. Now, trails before Anchorage trails have always been a part of Alaska's story, beginning many centuries ago with the indigenous people using trails and rivers for trade and communication. Now, those same ancient trails were then later used by settlers and gold diggers to become the Iditarod and the Klondike Trail. Now is the time that a new vision of trails that would elevate Alaska into a world-class trail destination location, the time has come. This is the time, the place, and the right issue for us to take a humble, simple step forward. The vision is Alaska Long Trails. As a beginning, there would be three Alaska Long Trails. One would be the 900-mile route of the pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez. This brilliant idea of State Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins has already been underway quietly for the last couple of years, and there's a growing measure of public support and progress on the first phase. The second would be a 120-mile trail from the Coastal Trail in Anchorage to the docks of Stewart. And a third would be a Copper River, 179-mile trail from Glen Allen to Cordova. Now, a futurist could also maybe clearly see a 360-mile link between Fairbanks, where it touches the Taps Line, which is also the Trans-Alaska Trail, and Anchorage. And then a 180-mile link between the same spot in Fairbanks and Glen Allen. That would give us a 900-mile trail with a 500-mile link on one side and a 360-mile leg on the other side. These trails, I believe, would have the critical mass of breathtaking beauty and magnificent wildlife that would far surpass the international trails of Camino del Santiago in Spain, the Inca Trail in Peru, the Pacific Crest Trail and the Appalachian Trail in America, and even the mountain trails in Nepal and Bhutan. The millions of visitors that pay top dollars to experience those trails would have yet another destination location. And these three beginning trails would spur numerous satellite trails off of various access points on the main trail. So what are the benefits of Alaska Long Trails? The hundreds of thousands of independent travelers each year will put our tourism economy at a whole new level. It'll promote healthy lifestyle. It is a sustainable economy. It will become a permanent reason for conservation and environmental protection of our wildlands. The expenses will be dramatically reduced by existing public right-of-way and the very negotiable, but not necessarily for any money, right-of-way all along the pipeline corridor. And finally, the experience and economic benefits open the doors to multiple sources of private and public capital and operational resources. These benefits make ALT doable, but not easy. Taking a page out of Anchorage's own past and how the trail system got built here, we know it must start and finish with a growing swell of grassroots public support. The political and institutional resistance will be considerable, but it can be overcome. And you know where it starts? Right here, tonight, with you. The alt leadership, I call them the four tenors, but actually I can't sing. It's Steve Cleary, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, and Pat Pershow, has already approached Alaska Trails and has the tentative agreement of merging with that organization. You are here tonight because you care about Alaska's trails. If you support all, let's pick up the beat. It begins with neighbors and friends, and then community councils, chambers of commerce, and local government. The legislature needs to know that they should adopt a resolution to encourage the governor to direct his cabinet to begin a feasibility study with Alaska Trails to establish the cost and collaboration of stakeholders. Then our federal delegations need to get their support known to federal agencies. We know the drill. We've done it before, and we've won. There will be no stopping us now. After all, it's just a simple, humble first step forward. Thank you.
Before we take a break for everybody to go get another drink, I want to invite Pierce up to this other microphone to let us know what great things are available when you purchase a raffle ticket through Bike Anchorage like I did earlier today. So those raffle tickets along with memberships to win those great prizes will be available back at the table back there. What can the folks win, Pierce?
I feel like a game show.
Let's make a deal.
Vanna, can you help me out here? Thank you. So we've got two round-trip tickets on Alaska Airlines as the grand prize, two round-trip tickets on Alaska Railroad, a bunch of stuff from Revelate Designs. We have some Uber credits. There's 45 prizes in total, so you have roughly a 10% chance of winning. Total 500 tickets sold, and they're $20 back there, so highly recommend it.
Great, and sign up as a member, and we'll do the drawing when we reconvene here in 15 minutes. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Lots of great stories to come. With our last three great storytellers, I'm going to draw the prizes for those folks kind enough to renew or start a membership with Bike Anchorage or Alaska Trails tonight. So if you hear your name called, please come and grab your very official slip of paper here and go back and choose from one of seven great prizes. Back on the table, Nate Anderson. Nate Anderson. David Berg. David Berg. Looks like he's from North Dakota. There's seven prizes to choose from. They'll help you out back at the table. Tom Choate. Tom Choate, the mountain goat. Woo! Hans Arnett. Oh, look at him run. Hans Arnett. Hans. Got three more prizes. Let's see who's next. Let's see who's next. Mari. Is that Mari Loewinger? Jane Sullivan. And Kay Sind. I think those are all of our prizes. Thanks to all the folks who signed up as a new or renewing member. We're going to go ahead and get started with our last three stories, which I'm very, very excited about. So if you could grab a beer and get set to listen to these three great stories. And we're going to have lots of time after those stories are finished to hang out and have another beer and chat. So thanks again to all the prize donors for tonight. Really makes it special that you're interested enough to invest in our organizations, and we really thank you for that. Let me grab my sheet real quick. I want to point out that in our small back room over here is Eric Bork with Alaska Public Media. And he has been coming to the last few Trail Tales and recording those, recording these stories and sharing them on the radio in bits and pieces, generally in the Outdoor Explorer show, which is a great show, which was on today. I don't know if anybody was listening. They were talking about the Olympics, and it was a really great show hearing from the Alaskans who are going to be at the Olympics. I thought back into my head listening to other Outdoor Explorer shows where I've heard Ira Edwards on the radio or Heather Helzer, and I think it's a really great resource, not just about trails, but at all kinds of great activities outdoors. But that leads me into our next storyteller, Heather Helzer, who I first heard, again, on the Outdoor Explorer radio show. She's a proud hiking mom to a now 16-month-old son named Finch. She left her teaching job about a year ago after having Finch and started her own business called Turnigan Training, Alaska's first kids triathlon team and race series geared around and for kids. She's a USA triathlon certified coach and a youth junior elite coach and has competed all the way from junior elite races to Ironman triathlons. Her passion is to get more kids involved in triathlon in Alaska by opening more opportunities in triathlon here in Alaska for kids. And the story I heard on the radio is the one she's going to share tonight of her and her then 10-month-old son doing a solo hike of the entire Chilkoot Trail this past August. Please welcome Heather Helzer.
Okay, so just like Tony, I prepped We practiced a lot last night. And I'm really outgoing, but I might be a little nervous, so bear with me for the first couple of minutes. Okay. In winter of 2016, I had just had my son. I had a bucket list, and I'm very type A. I looked it over, and I thought, all right, Crow Pass, Kasugi Ridge, Choku Trail. That's what we're doing. I sent a message out to all my friends. Tons of them were like, yeah, I want to do this one. I want to do that one. I want to do this one. Well, the Choku Trail, you have a lot of logistics you have to plan out in advance. Alaskans, they don't plan, you know? They're like very much like, oh, weather window, good, let's go, you know? So I said, all right, let's start booking. It was January. Everybody bailed. So I said, all right, Phil, go, if you know what that means. Finch and I decided to go on the Choku Trail by ourselves. So, I mean, he chose. my husband is an amazing mountaineer and avid outdoorsman. He decided that he needed to go do bigger mountains that weekend. Unfortunately, he tore his ACL in June, and he had reconstructive knee surgery 3 days before we left. So here we go. So we started prepping for our trip. I had at the time a 2-month-old baby. Had to figure out the clothes, had to figure out what kind of backpack I was going to carry. I've done several backpacking trips, but the difference is now I was carrying a backpack with a carrier on the front. Super uncomfortable. So I have my son on the front, my backpack on the back. But the biggest thing that I need to figure out in January for our August trip is how many diapers do you have to carry? It's an equation, and you don't want to screw it up. The answer, 16. But I had two extra at the end of the trip. The other answers are that I carried a Deuter backpack, an Anya full synthetic carrier for my son. All the other carriers in this world are cotton and cute. Mine is cute, but it's synthetic. Patagonia, everything else. And then an Okiwa wearing suit for my son. So in January, we figured out the logistics. That's one thing that people don't understand about going to the Choku Trail is the logistics are just ridiculous, especially when you live in Anchorage and it's several hundred miles away. We had three flights we had to book. Flights from here to Juneau, from Juneau to Skagway. I had a ferry to book from Juneau to Skagway. On the way back, I took a seaplane back. I had a train to book. I had to get a permit for the trail as well, and I had to book three different hotels. I stayed a night in Juneau, and then a night in the hotel before and a night after I got done. So a lot of logistics. So, and then at that time in January, I planned out that I was going to do 3 nights, 4 days of hiking. I thought that was pretty standard. I don't know, 33 miles, do the math. It's not that aggressive, so I thought. So fast forward to our trip. First day, so we flew out on Saturday to Juneau, like I said, stayed the day in Juneau. Sunday, we took the ferry to Skagway, and we get there. You have to pick up your permit. My permit was permit number 12. There were 12 of us hiking. I was the last one there. I'm a mom. I'm always last. There are 50 people a day that get permits. That was my goal from day one. So I wasn't like your hardcore person that was gonna be like, oh, I'm gonna go hike this trail by myself. I was very much so like, oh, 50 people hike a day? I'm super outgoing. I'm gonna meet people. I'm gonna mooch off them. We're gonna hang out. I'm not gonna hike by myself. You know, and that was kind of my plan from day one. So 12 people picked up permits, myself included. That day I also found out that I was the only person that was hiking to Sheep Camp. Everybody else, Sheep Camp is 13 miles the first day. I thought that was pretty normal. Everybody else was only hiking 7.5. So there we go. So day one, we start hiking. You have to take a shuttle. That's another logistic. Sorry. I feel like I keep crouching down. You have to take a shuttle from town out to the trailhead. It's like 8 or 9 miles to the trailhead. So you get to the shuttle. I knew it was going to be a great day right from the start. The sunshine comes out. There's a rainbow. We're in Southeast Alaska, people. It is rainy every day, right? Rainbows come out. You know good things are going to happen. So we're pumped. We're excited. We got 13 miles today. No problem. I need to add something. I'm petrified of bears. I was raised in New York, upstate New York. I need to clarify that so you get the right perspective of me. I was raised in upstate New York. I moved to Alaska for the mountains, for the love of the outdoors. But I'm not comfortable with bears. I need to also say that both of the people that were killed by black bears this past year, I went to both of their funerals. They were both my friends. One was a student of mine. One was my friend that was in our was part of our wedding. So it was engraved in my head. So I was afraid, right? I also had a deadline, 5:30. There's this awesome talk. You can't miss it. It's at sheep camp. They're going to talk about the trails, the conditions for the next day. You got to make it. And so I get dropped off. The trailhead's like 9 o'clock by the time I left. And so I got, 8 hours to make it. And so I hiked the first 7.5 miles by myself, basically. We got to Canyon City, and I tried to convince all these people, right? I'm like, 11 people show up. I'm like, hey, you feeling good? You want to keep hiking? You look good, And everybody was like, no, we got to stick to the plan. This is the permit. You got to stick to the permit. And I was like, come on, permit. And they were like, no. And so from that point on, I was like, all right, I'm by myself. So as mentioned, I'm a triathlon coach and an endurance athlete. So basically slow jogged for the next 5.5 miles because I just wanted to be done. I was like, I just got to get there. So we made it in time for that 5:30 hike, just in time. And I must admit that when I got to sheep camp, I burst into tears. I just started crying because I didn't think that was going to happen. I pictured it in my head, the bear, the it was super foliage in that whole area, that whole first 13 miles, tons of foliage, loud creaks everywhere and rivers, you can't really hear anything. I'm screaming, hey bear, hey bear, hey bear. I could have sworn my son's first word was going to be, hey bear, right? I said it so many times. I don't even know how he slept because he was like sleeping so much. He kept sleeping, and I'm just screaming. And I kept thinking, I wonder how many decibels are going to make my kid deaf. We got to that sheep camp. I bursted into tears crying. These people are like, why is she crying? And I'm like, 37 people are here. Oh, my God, my family, I'm so excited. I'm like introducing myself to everybody. I'm just like, they got to all start knowing me. I need to have hiking partners for tomorrow. It was fantastic. It was really great. The one error that I will mention that I did the first day, everything was beautiful. Don't give your kid chili mac with beef on day one. It's my favorite, but it could have screwed up the equation, but it didn't, but it could have. It was an interesting day too. So day two, you have to leave at 5 in the morning. You have to leave at 5 in the morning. This is what they say at the talk. You got to get up. You got to leave at 5 in the morning. You got to get through the pass by noon. And I'm thinking, get the heck out of here. 3.5 miles to the pass? I'm going to make it by noon? What? And I'm like, I'm not leaving. And I'm not leaving that early. I'm not waking my kid up. And I told the ranger, I was like, yeah, I'm not leaving that early. And so I left at 7:30. We were the last people out of camp. I was like, yeah, whatever. I lived for a day. I'm going to be fine. We were at the front of the group by, within 2 hours, because I was like on power mode. The Choku Pass is an amazing pass. It's 3,500 feet. At sheep camp, it's 1,000 feet. So it is quite a bit of a climb. It was a blessing in disguise. My son slept from the bottom of Choku Pass, when you can see that epic pass, all the way up and over to the pass. It was the best thing ever. I need to mention to you that my son at the time was 20 pounds. My backpack on my back was 50. And as I climbed up that pass, I literally was on my hands and knees. Literally, I said to a hiker as I passed him, hey, can you put these in the back of my backpack? Because I couldn't use my trekking poles because it's literally that steep that you're just hand over foot, just crawling. So So it was a blessing that my son slept. And those were the things that I think in my head that could have been the epic story of the Alaska stupid mom, right? Like the rain, I could have fallen into a rock crevasse, you know. Yeah, all those things could happen. But the bottom line is that I live my life not with the what ifs. I live my life to what I feel like should be the way you should live your life. I don't live it in fear. I live it with the goal in mind of finishing something, and I just take it one step at a time. There was a time I slipped on a rock. I fell up to my crotch, and I thought, oh my God, that could have been it, you know? And then from then, I slowed down, we slowed down, we paid attention, and it was good. We had an amazing day after that. We made it up to the pass. You know, the Rangers were so sweet. They said, hey, you're the mom and baby group. Like, everybody had been watching for us. They had said that they, like, were talking about me, like, on the speakers. And, like, literally every Ranger we passed said the same thing. And they would say stuff like, hey, can we take your diapers? And I'd be like, no. And we're not going to tell anybody. And I'd be like, no, you're not going to take my diapers. I really think that that's nice of you, but I need to do this on my own. Because the difference when you're hiking the Choku Trail is you're getting lighter. I'm not. I'm getting heavier as you go. So that's the thing that's important to mention about hiking with a baby. So my pack was probably heavier than 50 pounds. So from that day on, it was amazing. I had a family of 12 on day 3 I hiked with. They were on a family reunion. I joined the family reunion. It was fantastic. They were so good to me. We stayed at Bear Loon Lake. It was a beautiful night. The next day we hiked to Bennett. It was a great day. You know, mild rain, but nothing really to write home about. It was really an amazing trip. So the bottom line about my story is, if there's a will, there's a way. My family believes that we continue living life just the way that we had before we had kids. We just accept the fact that life's going to be harder. There's going to be more, you know, more struggles and more good stories to add to this, you know, story of life. The only thing that I now question asking myself is, how do I do this with 2 kids? Thank you.
Great, thanks, Heather. We'll all make sure to avoid the chili mac, I think. Our next speaker this evening is Will Davis. He is a former cheesemonger at Formaggio, currently a sake guy at La Bodega, a potter, cat lover, trail user, and bike enthusiast. Will is going to share a story of a reunion with a bike that he thought was lost to him. All right, Will.
Hello, I'm Will, and one thing I've learned tonight, and you will all soon learn, is that I'm the least cool person on this panel. These people are all really awesome. I have never bike packed or done any work to improve trails or build trails. I've never collided with a moose or a deer. And is my fly unzipped? No? Okay, we're good. And I've never held public office. But I just love my bicycle, and I love riding my bicycle like that Queen song. And I really, really love our trail system in Anchorage. And, you know, I ride my bike to work in the summer because I'm not that hardcore. And yeah, that's about it. It's great. So, where was I going next? My story is about a beautiful summer day last July where I rode my bike to work, as I'm sure a lot of you do. Oh, and I guess that's what I was gonna say, is maybe I'm like some of you out there who aren't amazing badasses, but just like their bikes. So I rode my bike to work. This was a lovely, like, 75-degree Sunday. You know, I got started at, like, 10:30 a.m., like, easy sleep-in, basically, and got to work. And it was one of those days that's so nice that you just, like, rather be outside, like, shoveling poop than inside doing whatever you're doing. And, you know, 7 p.m. rolls around, I get off work and, like, lock the door and, like, turn around, and my bike is gone. And just quick show of hands, who here has had a bike stolen ever? And who here just knows a friend or knows someone that's had their bike stolen? So it's definitely a problem. And it's the worst. So, I mean, yeah, I did what anyone would do. I got on my phone and got on the, like, you know, municipality, like, stolen item page and sifted through that and posted a thing. And, you know, I was just pacing around, figuring out what I'm going to do, and just started walking home. And took the long way, you know, cut through every single side street in between 36 and Benson, and just made it a really long walk, and had those, like, fantasies of, if I see someone riding it, like, am I gonna run up and Chuck Norris them, like, off of my bike, and because that could happen, and or if I saw it in the back of a truck, maybe, like, do a sweet, you know, Tom Cruise, like, leap into the bed, and that didn't happen. I just got home and didn't have my bike and stewed about it. And then I got on Facebook and I posted a picture of my bike and a bunch of awesome people shared it, and but still no bike. 2 days later, I think on Tuesday, I got a text from a friend of a picture of my bicycle, which I should tell you about my bicycle real quick. It's really cool. It's a 1986 Nishiki Olympic 12. And it's like teal and white. It's a total just queen of the 80s. And it's pretty sexy. But it's worth, like, I bought it when I was like 15 or 16 for like $175. Not really worth anything. And I always kind of thought the old timers were safe around town, you know? Could just lock it up or leave it unlocked and it'd be fine. But not the case. But anyways, I got a picture of this truck with my bike in the back of it. And it had the license plate. I even could see the cross street. It was on Jewel Lake and Diamond. And but I was, like, in a meeting at work and couldn't, like, do anything about it. So I'm just sitting there for, like, 2 hours, like, tapping my foot, like, let's get this over with so I can call the police. And I do that, and I give them the license plate number. I'm like, we've got a solid lead on my bike. And the person's like, yeah, that truck is stolen. So that lead was gone, basically. But that night, I just drove over to Jewel Lake and Diamond, and it was pouring down rain, and I just drove around for, like, 2 hours down every single street and, like, in people's driveways and just looked like an insane person. Probably looked pretty sketchy myself, like, I'm scoping out this neighborhood. But just drove around looking for my bike, and still to no avail. But then the highlight of the story, I guess, is... the following Sunday, I'm at work, just the same shift I was the day my bike got stolen, and I get a text from my friend who was on break from work and just, you know, saw my bike in the Fred Meyer parking lot on Northern Lights and like Seward Highway, which is about a block from where it was stolen. And he's just said, I have eyes on your bike, what should I do? And I just responded, call the police, please, and, like, here's the case number. And APD showed up, and they got my bike back. Yeah. Go APD. And so I talked to the officer on the phone, and I'm a dummy who didn't know my serial number, but I just described it in, I guess, enough vivid detail, like the shade of teal that it is, that he believed me. And they brought my bike back to me, pretty much not ruined, which was great. That's it. I had basically at this point written it off as gone and somewhat irreplaceable. It's not a modern bike, and I don't know, I've never seen another one, but it was, you know, one of those things where you're just like, someday I'll see that bike. And maybe some of you have that feeling about your stolen bikes, like, someday I'll see it. And, it's always possible. I guess the moral of my story is just, stay resilient and stay vigilant and keep riding your bikes, and thieves are bad. And that's my story.
Okay, thanks, Will. We will stay vigilant. All righty. Last but not least, we have Matthew, or Birch Block. Matthew was born and raised around Palmer. He grew up hunting, fishing, and wild harvesting. He is an avid bike enthusiast and has been a volunteer for many years at Off the Chain Bicycle Collective. He has coordinated a community subsistence hunt for many years. Awesome video floating around on YouTube on that hunt, so you guys should check that out for sure. Worked as a commercial fisherman in Bristol Bay, a chaga harvester, and a personal care assistant in Wasilla. Birch lives in a dry off-grid cabin he built in historic Knick. He will be talking about the community caribou hunting by bicycle. Alrighty. Thanks, Birch.
Hello. So I was asked to tell a story of a trip that we've done for, I think next year is going to be our fifth annual community bike hunt. And I just thought I'd start. The biggest story that sticks out to me is the first trip that we did out there. So I'll go back to the beginning. We did do a scouting trip the year previous, just two of us, me and my friend Gabe. And we went up to the Denali Highway. We hiked, we didn't bring bikes this time. We didn't know there were roads. We didn't know there were anything usable. So my friend Gabe and I went in for probably one of the most arduous and difficult hunts I'd ever been on. I've been hunting since I was like 10 years old. I think my dad strapped like a quarter of a moose to my back when I was 13 and just told me to walk. So we went up there, and I don't think Gabe was gonna come again after this hunt, because we had gone in like 6 or 7 miles on foot walking next to this perfectly good road that would have been really nice with something that rolled. But we ended up getting a big bull caribou and splitting between two people, and with the subsistence hunt permits we're on, they require you to take out the hide, the kidneys, we took out the tongue, the brain, like we salvaged everything we possibly could out of this. And that's really important to us as like a subsistence group. So our packs were probably 120 pounds, which proportionally to Supermom over here, maybe was not as much for body mass. But it was really hard for us to get out walking on a perfectly good bikeable road. So the next year we came back with a strong like passion. We're gonna bring bikes. And most of us off the chain don't have a lot. So we were thinking like, oh my gosh, we're gonna have like burly trailers and children's things that are rated to 40 pounds and they're gonna all break and fall apart and we're not gonna be able to put them in. And so I tried to write some, I was on a sponsorship kick for a little minute. And we wrote, I thought like maybe the best bike company that we should try to solicit was like a really surly bike. Who's gonna like do this? And I was like, oh, we should write Surly Bikes. They're gonna do it for us. And they have these two sweet flatbeds that they sent us for totally free. They send them to the Bike Collective. And these things are rated to like 300 pounds. They're just solid steel. They're really tough. So I'm like, all right, we got step one. We got our trailers. We're going to be able to do this. So we go up. We go with a crew. We get like all the group together. We have 14 people, I think. Trade out. Maybe there was even 18. And like everything, we threw together some Bob trailers in there. We had the Bills and the Teds from the Surleys. And we were packing them all into the bike trailers. We had a big flatbed in Anchorage, and we were like trying to make flatbed decks the night beforehand. We got up at 5 a.m., pitch black. We're trying to drive all the way up north, so we got hours and hours of driving. I have a unregistered trailer with no lights. I have like a really old Astro van, aptly named Disastro, that's like limping along, and is pulling the trailer with all this cargo. And I had my friend trail me the whole way just to make sure that we had some like lights and hopefully didn't get pulled over. And so there's a lot of room for error in this trip. And we get up there, we unload, we go up, and we're getting like really tired. We all thought we were in pretty good shape. We all try to bike a lot and have a lot of fun biking. But if you put 100 pounds on a trailer and you bike it uphill in a valley, it's very humbling. And we weren't in as good a shape as we thought. So we get in about 6 miles, we're starting to get tired, and we were smart, we brought radios, we're like communicating with a couple people up front, and they're like, no, there's a perfect camp, just keep coming, it's really close, and it wasn't that close, and we keep biking, we get there like pitch black, super cold, we just get set up and pass out. Next morning I wake up, there's probably we invited a lot of people who weren't really ready to hunt. So maybe there was like, out of the 14, maybe there's like two people ready to hunt. I was one of them, and maybe there was like one or two more. And then I wake up to somebody like banging on my tent, like, "Birch, there's caribou on the riverbed. You gotta get up, gotta go get them." And there, I woke up, there were caribou right out next to camp, just right there. And so me and another friend, we just like didn't even pack water. I don't even think I grabbed ammo. I just grabbed my gun. We just started chasing. We're like, "Oh, it's gonna be easy. We're gonna get them close." But if anybody's ever chased a caribou, it's never that easy. And so we probably chased them about 3 miles, no water, no extra, no pack, no nothing. And finally, we got two. So we have two, and we like start field dressing them. The group comes up behind us, and it's awesome to have eight people surrounding a caribou to skin it, field dress it, get everything out, have it, start people packing out. So we get these two all ready to go. And as soon as we get those two ready to go, there's like another herd coming down the hill right after us. And so I think I have like two bullets left, and I'm like, I just got a drink of water from somebody. Somebody threw me a water bottle, and so I go start chasing these other herd. So we chase after those for another 2 miles. We get one. We hike back to camp, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get some breakfast. It's probably 3 p.m. And I go take a nap for about 5 minutes. The other two designated hunters, they're off up on, they go like searching for caribou in some other valley, and somebody comes beating on my tent about 5 minutes into my nap, like, "Birch, there's caribou on the riverbed. Go grab my gun, get my gun, run out, and just start going after them. This time I had my pack, though. I had some water, I had some snacks, and then found this herd another 2 miles up or so. I don't know, distances are starting to get kind of, I'm pretty exhausted, didn't sleep very good the last few nights. And then end up going up, getting up on the herd. There's a couple nice bulls in there. Shoot at one, kind of in the brush. Didn't see where it landed, and then they came out again, shot at another one I thought was the same one, and then I walked up and I had two more. So now I got two caribou. It's like not even 12 hours, and I've hunted caribou a long time since I was really young. I don't think I've ever seen this many caribou. Like five in one day is kind of out of control. And I was just like, what did I get myself into? This is ridiculous. So we start field dressing those. Some more people from the group show up, help us field dress them. We get them down. Luckily, somebody's like brought one of the big flatbed Surly trailers right to the road, so we don't have to pack in the last mile. They run them down to camp. We've got five caribou on the meat pole. We all go to bed. I think the northern lights were out real good, but I didn't see them. And then next morning, same thing. Somebody's beating on my tent. "Birch, there's caribou on the riverbed. I'm like, oh my goodness. All right. I know the other two designated hunters are in camp. I'm sleeping. I'm going to get breakfast. You two, what is it, Alan, Gabe, you guys go get those caribou." And so they go after them. I hear two gunshots in my bed. I'm like, oh, I guess I better get out of bed. So we got like, then we got seven caribou on the meat pole. Those were right in camp too. So everybody got to be around. Everybody got to help out. And then now I'm thinking like, oh my goodness, how many pounds we got? Seven. That's probably 800, 900 pounds of stuff we got to move. And we haven't tested on any of these trailers yet. We're like, is this gonna work? This is probably a bad time to start thinking about those thoughts. So we start loading things up, and like just as we're leaving, I think we had a total of 8 tags total that year to bring up there. And as soon as we're leaving, we hear one more gunshot, and we're like, oh no. 8 caribou on the meat pole. So we start loading them, and actually things go pretty well. So I'll plug Surly a little bit. They got pretty good trailers. And we started hauling stuff out. We had some reinforcements. We had our friends Kendra, Will, Kate, Carp came to help us out. And they were all bike packing super light, so they were feeling pretty good by the time they got to camp that day. They did a load. I think it took about 2 days to run all this stuff out. And then put it all in the freezer, cut it all up, spread it amongst the group. And since then, we had a raging success, I guess, kind of. But since then, we've put up, the last 4 years, 2,644 pounds of caribou that went to over 60 households. And we donated hundreds of pounds to Otna tribal offices, whose ancestral lands we were hunting on. And we hauled every bit of it out to the trailhead by bike power. And I just want to say that also that that would not have been possible without there being a designated non-motorized area. I want to emphasize how important that was in like our success and the success of lots of other people. I like to see those continue and let's like break the dominant paradigm of motorized hunting and let's go back to foot and human power. And I think we need those areas, especially the Denali Highway area, the Clearwater Controlled Use Area is being threatened by a lot of new trail development, and they're trying to push to lower the size of it, smaller and smaller. So it'd be nice to see that not get reduced in size, and I'd like to see closer areas so we don't have to drive 5 hours to get to a non-motorized area and closer to home. So I think a lot can happen to this. I think if people stay creative and people look at a lot of options, we can go out and we can harvest and we can subsist without turning gasoline into noise more. So. Yeah.
Well, that was really cool. Thanks, Birch. I've seen the video and heard stories. I didn't realize it was 5 years and you've had such great success. So thanks for sharing your story tonight. Let's give a hand to all the storytellers. We really appreciate their sharing tonight, and we hope to see all of you back right in this room on March 29th for our next edition of Trail Tales. I want to thank Bike Anchorage for being our partner tonight. Lots of good information for volunteering with either or organization back at the White Table, and you can still buy those great raffle tickets. We are going to be voting on a parks bond soon, so show your support by taking a photo over here and sharing it with your friends. As I mentioned before, there's lots of great trail stuff on there, and we certainly hope that it passes. Grab a beer and hang out and chat. Thanks again for coming, everybody.